Let me read out to you the first paragraph of The Life Divine. This is the best introduction to The Life Divine, in fact. You will see what a breathtaking sweep it is. It's only 4 or 5 lines, in fact. It's a difficult sentence. I'll read very slowly. I think next time when you come, if you can bring with you the text itself, it will be very useful. The earliest preoccupation of man in his awakened thoughts and, as it seems, his inevitable and ultimate preoccupation for it survives the longest periods of skepticism and returns after every banishment is also the highest which his thought can envisage. It manifests itself in the divination of Godhead, the impulse towards perfection, the search after pure truth and unmixed bliss, the sense of a secret immortality, the ancient dawns of human knowledge have left us their witness to this constant aspiration. Today, we see a humanity satiated but not satisfied by victorious analysis of the externalities of nature, preparing to return to its primeval longings. The earliest formula of wisdom promises to be its last: God, light, freedom, immortality. This is the first paragraph of The Life Divine, and it contains everything that is in the whole book. Now let me point out a few specialities of this paragraph. I don't like to comment on what Sri Aurobindo has written, but this can be such an innocent comment, it can be pardoned. I just wanted to show you what I find in this paragraph of very special importance. Let me read again. The earliest preoccupation of man in his awakened thoughts. Now this adjective, awakened thoughts, is very important. Sri Aurobindo here describes the history of mankind from the time, not most primitive time, but when began to become awakened, when he began to think at all. In other words, Sri Aurobindo wants to emphasize the history of thought. The human aspiration has expressed itself in the thought movement. So, Sri Aurobindo begins with the history of thought. So this adjective, awakened thought, is very significant. Then, and as it seems, this word, this phrase, as it seems, he could have said also, and it will be. No, that is unphilosophical. He has not proved as yet that it will be also his inevitable preoccupation. Since it is not proved intellectually, you cannot make a statement and it will be. No, as it seems. Why seems? Because if you read the whole book, then you will justify why it seems here. So, purely from intellectual rigor, this small phrase, as it seems, there is no dogma in it. There is no assertion which has not been supported as yet, which has not been examined. His inevitable and ultimate preoccupation, that is to Sri Aurobindo says, the earliest preoccupation of man, it seems, will be also his ultimate preoccupation. Now this is his reading of the whole human history. But since he has not expounded the whole history, he doesn't say it will be. That is the whole subject matter of the whole book, to show that what was aspired after by man in the earliest times when he began to think consciously. And if you examine man throughout the history of mankind, throughout, constant theme, if there is any one constant theme in the human history, and therefore it seems that even in future, it is very likely that it will be his inevitable preoccupation. But that it will be cannot be affirmed at the very beginning, because that is still to be brought out. So Sri Aurobindo uses the word "as it seems." So now read the whole sentence and see the compactness of intellectual rigor in it. The earliest preoccupation of man in his awakened thoughts, and as it seems, his inevitable and ultimate preoccupation, is also the highest. Now here it is not as seems. Here he makes a statement that the earliest preoccupation of thought, which seems to be also the ultimate preoccupation of man, is also the highest which his thought can envisage. Now why this? Here he doesn't say it seems. Why in the first place he has written "as it seems," and here he simply says "is also the highest which his thought can envisage"? What is this justification of this change? Why here he doesn't say that earliest preoccupation, which also seems to be ultimate preoccupation, also seems to be the highest that the human thought can envisage? Why not? The reason is that if you examine the content of that aspiration, then philosophically you can demonstrate that it is the highest that human thought can envisage, not seems. You can demonstrate, and that is also a task of the book, it will demonstrate that this preoccupation of man can be demonstrably be shown to be really the highest that human thought can envisage. That is to say, if you examine the nature of thought, if you examine the peaks of thought that you can rise to, and if you have risen to all the peaks, then having risen to the peaks, you can be absolutely certain, no probability, you can be certain that that content of the preoccupation is the highest that human thought can envisage. That is to say, human thought has in itself certain capacity of reaching the highest point. This is the speciality of thought, of pure reason. This is the strongest point of philosopher. A philosopher can say that even before the history is over, before that, any time in the history of thought, you can say what is the highest that thought can envisage. What Plato says is the highest that a human thought can envisage is also what Dipti can say as a philosopher as to what is the highest that the human thought can envisage. Both the conclusions will be identical. If both have reached the peak of thought, and that can be reached at any time of the human history. The moment you begin to think and think deeply and seriously, this is the possibility that is presented to the thought itself. Thought can rise to its highest peak and can be certain that it has reached the highest peak. It can find out that it is now the highest reach. Just as if you reach the top of Everest, you can be sure that you have reached the highest peak. Similarly, when you reach the highest peak of thought, you can be sure that you have reached, there is certainty in it. That is the meaning of the logic of thought. The thought and its highest peak, what is the relationship between human thought, which are many thoughts are there. Among the human thoughts, there are peaks. And you can reach the highest peak, and when you reach the highest peak, you are certain that you have reached the highest peak. And what you see in that, you can be certain what you are seeing, and you cannot doubt it. Therefore, that gives you the strength of stating this small word is, not seems. You can say with confidence that that is the highest that the human thought can envisage. So at the very first point you have got the purely philosophical rigor, where the certainty cannot be ascertained and cannot be affirmed. Sri Aurobindo uses the word as it seems. Where certainty can be ascertained and fully asserted, he uses the word is. So let me read again. The earliest preoccupation of man in his awakened thoughts and as it seems, his inevitable and ultimate preoccupation is also the highest which his thought can envisage. Now, there is a parenthesis in this very sentence which I omitted just now in my, but it's a very important parenthesis. And that is the justification of the word seems. The highest, the earliest preoccupation of man, and Sri Aurobindo says, it seems also his inevitable preoccupation. Then he gives reason as to why he writes that there is some basis for saying it seems. For it survives the longest periods of skepticism and returns after every banishment. This preoccupation of man is of such a nature that even when you doubt it, and doubt it on and on and on and on and on and on, longest periods of skepticism. Skepticism is an attitude of doubting. So you go on doubting for a long period, 100 years, 200 years, 300 years. You try to banish it, saying, no, this preoccupation, you have nothing to do with it. But historically, it's a fact. Now you can controvert, you can read the history. Does it happen or not? It's a fact. You cannot controvert it, it's a historical fact. It may be that mankind is mad and returns to this again and again. After banishment of this preoccupation, man returns again to that preoccupation. Even after centuries of banishment, you may say man is mad. But so, this is only a historical fact. Historical fact is that man's madness for that preoccupation is so great that even when you try to throw it away from your kingdom of mind, exile it, and for centuries you exile it, it comes back again. Again the man begins to think. Man's search for God, light, freedom, immortality, this is the earliest preoccupation of man. You try to banish God, and if you read history, how many times God has been banished by man? And yet he returns. Man's hunger for God returns. And sometimes it returns with a tremendous hunger, greater than before. This is a historical fact. If you read the history of mankind,